Welcome to the GNO Gardening Magazine, September 2019. In this issue, Super Plant Spotlight, Camelot Foxgloves by Dr. Alan Owings. Garden Myth Exposé, Compost is the Best Organic Fertilizer by Anner Timmerman. Let Us Make You Smile by Dr. Joe Willis. What's Bugging You? Southern Chinch Bug by Dr. Heather Kirk Ballard. Mini Prairie Plantings by Mike Glassbell. September Planting Guide, Farmers Markets in the GNO Area, In the Kitchen with Austin, Upcoming Events, September Garden Checklist, Lawns, Do's and Don'ts. On the cover is a photo of prairie flowers by Mike Glassbell. Your reader is Chris Dunaway. Page 2, Super Plant Spotlight, Camelot Foxgloves. The Louisiana Superplant Program is an educational and marketing campaign that highlights tough and beautiful plants that perform well in Louisiana landscapes. Louisiana Superplants have a proven track record, having gone through several years of university evaluations and observations. Louisiana Superplants are university tested and industry approved. Each superplant must have at least 2 years of rigorous evaluations and have proven track record under growing conditions in North and South Louisiana. Superplants must prove hardy across the state. Superplants must be easily produced and available for all green industry wholesalers and retailers to market and sell. The Louisiana Superplant Selection Committee, composed of LSU Ag Center research and extension personnel, selects plants based upon observations made in replicated plots and demonstration trials across the state. The Louisiana Superplant Advisory Committee, comprised of green industry personnel, producers, retailers, and landscapers from across the state, meet with the Superplant Selection Committee for further scrutiny of the plant's landscapability and marketability. This selection process gives each superplant the combined rating of university tested and industry approved. This month's superplant spotlight falls on Camelot Foxgloves, Digitalis purpurea, are biennials or short-lived perennials. Here in the Deep South, however, we grow them as cool season annuals. That is, we grow them during the cool season, which runs from November to April, May. They bloom in the spring or early summer and then typically die in the heat of the summer. The Camelot series foxgloves are bred to be especially strong and vigorous growing, and these foxgloves are somewhat more heat tolerant than foxgloves used in the past, allowing Camelot foxgloves to bloom well into late May or early June. These plants produce large flowers displayed on 16 to 18 inch long flower spikes. The flowers are larger and spikes are taller than the previously grown varieties. The bell-shaped flowers of foxgloves are arranged around a strong, tall stem that grows from the center of the plant. Typically, the flowers of foxgloves tend to hang down and you cannot see into the beautifully spotted throats. The flowers of Camelot foxgloves, however, are held more horizontally and faced outward instead of down, which creates a fuller looking flower spike and reveals the spotted interior of the flowers for the best show. They make an outstanding display anywhere, but are great in tall borders or background plantings. Rose, lavender, and cream are recommended for the best performance by Alan Owings. On the page is a cover of Camelot Foxgloves with the appropriate caption. Page 3, September Vegetable Planting Guide. Crops include beets, with recommended varieties of dark red Detroit, Kestrel, red Ace F1, and Ruby Queen. Planting depth, 1/4 inch. Spacing, 2 to 4 inches. Days until harvest, 55 to 60. Broccoli. Plant Arcadia, Diplomat, Gypsy, Pac-Man, premium crop, Windsor or Greenbelt. Plant them 1 to 8 inches in depth with a spacing of 18 to 24 inches. Days until harvest, 70 to 90 after transplant date. Brussels sprouts. Jade Cross E, Long Island Improved, Royal Marvel are some of the recommended varieties. Planting depth is 1/8 inch. Spacing, 12 to 15 inches. 90 days until harvest after transplant. Cabbage. Some recommended varieties include Blue Vantage, Platinum Dynasty, Stonehead, Cheers, Blue Dynasty, Emblem, and Rio Verde. Planting depth is 1/8 inch. Spacing is 12 to 15 inches. And the days until harvest is 65 to 75 after transplant. Chinese cabbage. No recommended varieties given. Planting depth is 1/4 inch. Spacing is 12 inches with 60 to 80 days until harvest after transplant. Carrots. Plant Danvers 128, Purple Haze, Thumbelina, Apache, Enterprise, Maverick, or Sugar Snacks 54. Planting depth is 1/8 inch. Spacing is 1 to 2 inches with 70 to 75 days until harvest. Cauliflower. Candid Charm, Cumberland, Freedom, Incline, Majestic, Snow Crown, and Wentworth are some recommended varieties. Planting depth is 1/8 inch, 18 to 24 inch spacing, with 55 to 65 days until harvest after transplant. Collards, Champion, Splash, Georgia Southern, Top Bunch, and Vates are some recommended varieties. Planting depth is 1/8 inch, 6 to 12 inch spacing with 75 days until harvest. Kale, no varieties given. 1/2 inch planting depth, 12 to 18 inch spacing with 50 days until harvest. Kohlrabi, plant Early Purple Vienna, Early White Vienna, and Winter. 1/8 inch planting depth, 6 inch spacing with 55 to 75 days until harvest. Lettuce, Esmerella, New Red Fire F1, Nevada, Tall, Guzman, Elite are some recommended varieties. 1/8 inch planting depth, 4 to 12 days until spacing, and 45 to 80 days until harvest. Mustard greens, Florida Broadleaf, Green Wave, Red Giant, Southern Giant, Curled, Savannah, and Tender Green are some recommended varieties. 1/8 inch planting depth, 4 to 6 inch spacing, and 35 to 50 days until harvest. English peas, Mr. Big, Novella 2, Oregon Sugar Pod 2, Sugar Ann, and Super Sugar Snap are some recommended varieties. Planting depth is 1/2 inch, with 2 to 3 inches between plants, 60 to 70 days until harvest. Irish potatoes, Dark Red Norland, Red Lasota, Red Pontiac, Kennebec, and Yukon Gold are some recommended varieties. Planting depth is 4 inches with 12 inch spacing and 90 to 120 days until harvest. Pumpkins, Atlantic Giant, Baby Bear, Cooligan, Sorcerer, Sprint, Silver Moon are some recommended varieties. 1/2 inch planting depth with 36 to 60 inches spacing between plants. The harvest interval should be 90 to 120 days. Radishes, Chariot, Champion, White Icicle, and April Cross are some recommended varieties. 1/8 inch planting depth with 1 inch spacing, 22 to 28 days until harvest. Shallots, no recommended varieties given. 1 inch planting depth, 4 to 8 inch spacing with 50 days until harvest. Swiss chard, no recommended varieties given. 1/4 inch planting depth, 6 to 8 inch spacing with 45 to 55 days till harvest. Turnip greens, Alamo, All Top, Purple Top, White Globe, Seven Top, Southern Green, Top Star, Tokyo Cross are some recommended varieties. 1/8 inch plant depth with 2 to 8 inch, 2 to 6 inch plant spacing, 40 to 50 days until harvest. You may find more recommended varieties by searching for the Louisiana Fruit and Vegetable Growers Association in your favorite search engine. Page 4. Gardening Myth Exposé. Compost is the best organic fertilizer. The LSU Ag Center has a lot of good information regarding fertilization rates for fruits, vegetables, and ornamental gardens. Typically, these recommendations for nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium fertilizers are given using a basic 888 or 13-13-13 balanced fertilizer product per square foot or row foot. If you've gotten soil test results back from LSU, they will have recommended rates of nitrogen, ammonium sulfate, urea, or ammonium nitrate, phosphorus, triple superphosphate, and potassium, muriate of potash, to apply based on soil availability and crop grown. The NPK values on all bags of fertilizer stand for the percentage by weight that product contains of each of those three macronutrients. For example, a pound of 888 fertilizer contains 8% nitrogen, so 0.08 per pound or 1.28 ounces of actual nitrogen in that pound of product. 16 ounces times 0.08 equals 1.28 ounces. Organic gardeners do not utilize the above-mentioned fertilizer products because they are synthetic. Instead, they seek out natural sources of nutrients. Compost is frequently recommended as a fertilizer, but there are many more efficient organic fertilizers out there. Compost varies in NPK from batch to batch or source to source, but in general, the NPK in compost falls somewhere within this range. Nitrogen, 1.5 to 3.5%, phosphorus, 0.5 to 1%, and potassium, 1 to 2%. Pretty low NPK, right? How much compost would a gardener need to fulfill the needs of their crop? The LSU Ag Center's Vegetable Planting Guide is a good reference publication for vegetable gardeners and lists general fertilizer recommendations for many vegetables. Let's use okra as an example. Okra is listed as needing 3 to 4 pounds of 888 per 300 square feet of garden or 100 feet of row. Let's pretend that we have a 100 foot long row planted with Clemson spineless okra, and we decide that we need 4 pounds of 888 in that row to grow a decent crop according to the guide. How much compost is needed to meet that same rate? Here's how to figure it out just for the nitrogen needed. At 8% nitrogen, applying 4 pounds of 888 to the 100 foot row of okra will actually be 5.12 ounces of actual nitrogen or 0.32 pounds of actual nitrogen. To meet this target, how much really good compost is needed? We'll assume that we have really good compost with 3.5% nitrogen. The 3.5% is what is immediately available. That 3.5% is what is immediately available for use by plants, plus what is released slowly over time. Within the 3.5%, approximately 3% of that is extractable, readily available nitrogen, and 97% slow-release nitrogen. More on this later. On this page, there is a photo of someone holding a handful of compost with a caption that reads, "A handful of compost made from tree leaves, grass clippings, and other organic waste material, including newspaper and junk mail." Page 5. So at the time of applying compost to the okra, almost none of it is actually readily available for use by the okra. About 30 90% of the nitrogen in compost will become readily available to plants within the first year after application. To apply 0.32 pounds of actual nitrogen required by the okra, 0.32 pounds divided by 0.035 nitrogen in compost equals 9.14 pounds. To meet this target, 9.14 pounds of really good compost will need to be applied to that 100-foot row of okra. Remember, this is 3.5% nitrogen compost, which is super good quality compost. But remember that only 3% of that is actually readily available to the crop. To apply a rate of 8% readily available nitrogen, you'd actually need to apply 304 pounds of really good 3.5% compost to hit this goal. Most commercially available bag compost of the garden center is more like 1% nitrogen, so you'd need to multiply this calculated rate by roughly a factor of 3.5 to derive the same available nitrogen goal. That brings the total required compost application up to 1,064 pounds. A yard of compost weighs roughly 1,600 pounds. Remember, this is for a single 100-foot row of okra. Compost tea is even weaker and varies widely, but usually has an NPK of around 1.500. Most commercially sold compost tea products, even the high-end ones, are unable to legally be registered and sold as fertilizer because they offer so little nutrition to the plants. A steady stream of compost tea would be needed to provide any benefit. Let's calculate how much would be needed for a newly planted Satsuma tree. The LSU's Ag Center's Home Citrus Guide recommends applying 0.5 pound of 888 in mid-March to newly planted trees. That's 0.64 ounces of nitrogen. To apply this rate using compost tea, you'd need to supply 42.66 pounds of compost tea, or roughly 5 gallons of compost tea over time. A gallon of liquid weighs 8.34 pounds. As that Satsuma tree matures, the fertilizer recommendation increases with the tree's needs to 12 pounds of 888 per year, meaning that 1,024 pounds or 123 gallons of compost tea would need to be added to the tree each year. This would quickly add up if you have multiple trees. And those calculations are just for nitrogen. You can do the calculations for phosphorus and potassium on your own, but I think the point is clear. A whole lot of compost or compost tea needs to be added to soil to meet the same soil fertility goals, accomplished by a few pounds of synthetic product. Last time I checked, really good finished compost in the New Orleans area is running about $60 a yard as a bulk price. A yard of compost is roughly 1,600 pounds, meaning the cost is then calculated to be roughly 16 to 26 cents per pound for bulk compost. Retail plastic packaged bags of compost cost even more per pound. That cost can add up even in a small garden quickly. On this page is a photo of a soil bag, a 1 cubic yard soil bag, with the caption, "A yard of compost represents the amount needed to fill a container measuring 3 feet wide, 3 feet long, and 3 feet high." Page 6. So when and why should we use compost in the garden? Compost plays many beneficial roles in any garden, which should not be treated as a sole fertilizer source for any garden or crop. Just some of the benefits of compost include: helps retain soil moisture and nutrients, builds a good healthy soil structure where air and water can penetrate, releases nutrients slowly over months and years, creates habitat for soil microorganisms, which helps to suppress disease and pests, sequesters soil carbon and reduces landfill waste, retains other fertilizer sources better and helps to meter them out, buffers the soil pH, and increases soil organic matter, reducing compaction. So what are some other organic fertilizers that can be used that are more effective and efficient than compost? Many garden centers are carrying organic fertilizer products that are blends of several organic materials. All are labeled by law with the NPK ratios, so gardeners know just what's in the bag. Using synthetic fertilizer recommendations, they should be able to calculate how much organic product to use by following the same math formula from earlier in the article. There are also lots of free fertilizer application calculators available on the internet. Commonly found organic fertilizer sources and their range of NPK values are listed below. Good sources of nitrogen: blood meal, 12.5, 1.5, 0.6. Fish meal, 10, 5, 0. Feather meal, 15, 0, 0. Good sources of organic phosphorus: bone meal, 7, 20, 0. Mushroom compost, 0.5, 50, 0.5. Rock phosphate, 0, 25, 0. Good sources of organic potassium: granite dust, 0.05, green sand, 0.15, 5, kelp meal, 1.5, 10, and wood ashes, 0.56. Some other very popular commercially available organic animal-based fertilizers are low in actual nutrient content, just like compost, and may not be cost-effective soil inputs. Worm castings, 1.5, 2.5, 1.3. Fish emulsion, 5, 1, 1. Composted poultry litter, 3, 2, 2. Composted cow manure, 2, 2, 2. On this page is a photo with the caption, "Green sand, also called gluconite, is a material mined from the ocean floor. It has a bluish-green color and is made of marine potash, silica, iron oxide, magnesia, lime, phosphoric acid, and about 30 other trace minerals." Page 7. Fresh manure can also offer a source of soil fertility, which is a whole other article topic, but in general, it should be aged and tilled into the soil. For food safety reasons, observe the 90-120 day rule, which says fresh manure must be applied to a food crop 90 days before harvest for above ground crops and 120 days before harvest for crops that have edible portions that make contact with the soil. Manure NPK varies widely, so many larger organic farms have it tested for NPK value to get a handle on just how much to apply. If you can get it, free manure can be a cost-effective source of fertility. One argument for applying a synthetic fertilizer is that products like 888 or 131313 provide NPK in a form that is immediately available to plants. Crops showing signs of nutrient deficiency can be quickly treated, and newly planted areas can be given a boost. Compost and other organic inputs, on the other hand, are considered to be a slow-release sources of nutrients and need to be metabolized by soil microorganisms to be converted to usable forms for plants. This process is known as mineralization and relies on the complex ecology of soil, including the fungi, bacteria, protozoa, insects, and other creatures found within the soil. This process takes time and can take several years in some soil ecosystems. Calculating soil amendment applications based on regular soil testing results, yearly testing is recommended, and utilizing soil conservation practices like low or no tillage gardening, mulching, or cover cropping can help to encourage the soil ecology to flourish and create a soil powerhouse able to break organic fertilizers down into forms that plants can use quicker. Compost is a great soil amendment and offers organic gardeners many benefits. However, better organic fertilizer inputs are available at most garden centers. An application of compost boosts soil organic matter, which functions as a habitat for the soil microorganisms that act as the workhorses of an organic gardening system. This alone is a great reason to apply several inches of compost per year to your garden beds. While compost does provide some slow-release nutrition, gardeners should be aware that additional sources of fertility are needed for many of the plants that we commonly grow in our landscapes. Hannah Timmerman. At the bottom of the page is a graphic showing a plant growing in soil. To one side of the picture is the word synthetic fertilizer, with arrows going directly to the plant. The other side of the plant, other words, organic fertilizer. And in the soil, you can see vegetables, leaves, and grass. And the arrows are pointing away from the organic material. They're pointing toward the plant, but then they're circling back around. The caption reads, "A popular saying is that organic fertilizer feeds the soil and synthetic fertilizer feeds the plant. But remember, fertilizer is not really plant food." Page 8. Let us make you smile. Lettuce, Lactuva sativa, is a favorite cool weather vegetable with most gardeners. Lettuce grows well in cool weather and tolerates light frost. Lettuce is one of the must-haves for a fall veggie garden in the greater New Orleans area. With a multiplicity of types and colors, lettuce can even make a nice addition to any landscape bed and still provide you with fresh salad greens all winter long. Lettuce is a rich source of vitamins K and A and a moderate source of folate and iron. There are basically four types of lettuce: loose leaf, cos, also known as romaine, crisp head or iceberg, and butterhead. Loose leaf lettuce, sometimes called cutting lettuce, produces a loose rosette of leaves and can be harvested at any stage. From microgreens to full-size leaves, it can be harvested by cutting the entire plant at the base or by plucking leaves individually. Using this method, you can harvest individual leaves at any stage and the plant will keep producing. Loose leaf lettuce also have the widest variety of colors and leaf types. It comes in green, red, burgundy, and speckled with leaves that have smooth edges, wavy edges, or deeply lobed. Though they can be harvested as soon as the leaves are the size to your liking, they are generally reach full head size in 35 to 50 days. Recommended varieties of loose leaf lettuce include these green leaf varieties: Leaf, Grand Rapids, Oak Leaf, Price Head, Nevada, Salad Bowl, Sierra, and Tango, and these red leaf varieties: New Red Fire, Red Sails, Red Salad Bowl, Lola Rosa, Red Oak Leaf, and Cherokee. Butterhead lettuce, also known as bib or Boston lettuce, is sweet and tender with loose, almost buttery leaves. Butterhead lettuce varieties form loose, rounded heads that are often harvested as full heads and generally take 65 to 75 days to form mature heads. Recommended varieties are Esmerella, Caliente, Skypos, Summer Bib, Harmony, and Buttercrunch. There are some other varieties of butterhead lettuce that have distinctive edges, swirls, or speckles of red foliage, such as Blushed Butterhead, Speckles, Carmona, and Four Seasons. Cos or romaine lettuce features a crisp texture but has a high nutritional density, making it a favorite in sandwiches and Caesar salads. Romaine lettuces grow narrow heads and has a higher tolerance for heat than other types and is slow to bolt. This page features a photograph of someone holding a bouquet of three different types of lettuce, as well as arugula. The caption reads, "A visitor to LaSalle Park Demonstration Garden takes home a bouquet of fresh salad greens. Top center arugula, left butterhead, lettuce, lower center romaine, right loose leaf lettuce. Page 9. Depending on variety, heads reach harvest size from 65 to 75 days after planting. There is at least one small variety, Little Gem, that matures in only 55 days. Romaine is commonly thought of as green, but there are also red and red flecked varieties available. Some recommended varieties are Cimarron Red, Flashy Trapback, Curro, Green Towers, Paris Island Cost, Red Eye, Muskina, and Tall Guzman Elite. While iceberg lettuce doesn't boast much flavor, it's got a crispness that many other greens lack. Thanks to its high water content, iceberg lettuce doesn't pack many calories, but it's not particularly high in other nutrients either. Iceberg forms a rounded, fairly tight head and takes about 85 days to mature. It's not as popular in our area because it is generally harder to get a good crop. The long maturation time combined with our humidity, snails, and other insects often leads to disappointing heads. If you want to give it a try, try Great Lakes, Crispino, Keeper, Maverick, Raider, and Ithaca are varieties that are recommended. All lettuce types have the same general requirements for growth. Lettuces like well-drained, sandy loam soil, rich in organics, a pH between 6 to 6.5, and 8 to 10 hours of sunlight per day. It's a good idea to have a soil test before planting. Otherwise, incorporate about a half a pound of 13-13-13 per 30 square feet before planting. In the fall, most lettuces can be direct seeded. Be careful not to bury the seed over 1/4 inch deep or it may not germinate. Use fresh seed each year. Lettuce seed loses viability rapidly, even when properly stored. Side dress with a high nitrogen fertilizer, about 15%, when leaves are about 4 inches wide, at the rate of 1/2 pound per 30 square feet, or 1 tablespoon per plant. With lettuce, we are only interested in getting leaves, so a higher dose of nitrogen is better. To provide a continual harvest of fresh lettuce, do successive plantings about every 2 weeks. This is especially a good idea if growing head lettuces, where the entire plant is harvested when mature. The most problematic insects on lettuce are caterpillars and aphids. Caterpillars are easily controlled with VT, and aphids can be controlled using insecticidal soaps. Both of these pesticides have a pre-harvest interval of 0 days. Diseases on lettuce usually occur during cool, wet weather and are more prevalent in areas with poor drainage. Damping off and bottom rot are less likely if you have good drainage and mulch your lettuce plants. Mulching is also a great way to control weeds in your lettuce patch. Downing mildew can sometimes be a problem if there are extended periods of wet weather. Mulching and spacing plants for good air movement help to prevent downy mildew. See last month's GNO Gardening for information on snails. Lettuce should be irrigated every 4 to 5 days for healthy growth. Lettuce has a long taproot and smaller side roots, so good deep irrigation is most beneficial. Lettuce should be drip irrigated to reduce disease incidence. There's no reason why anyone with a little bit of garden space or a few good-sized containers can't produce their own fresh lettuce and have plants that are attractive as well. Dr. Joe Willis. At the bottom of the page, there is a photograph showing lettuce growing in a field in rows. The caption reads, "Lettuce Variety Trials Conducted by LSU Ag Center Specialist Dr. Kiki Fontenot." For more information, search Lettuce and LSU Ag Center in your favorite search engine. Page 10. What's bugging you? Southern chinch bug. We are continuing to experience a heat wave this August without much relief. One thing that thrives in the hot and dry climate in our lawns and can become a real issue this time of year is chinch bugs. They are especially fond of St. Augustine grass. Chinch bug damage can be easily mistaken for lack of water and overall heat-stressed turf. The lawn will look like it's not been watered because the curling and shriveling up of the grass blades that eventually turn brown and die. However, it can also be a sign of chinch bug damage. You've got to do some investigating to get to the root of the problem. One key sign of chinch bugs is that the symptoms first appear as patches of dead grass in areas where heat is radiated from storm drains near streets and around sidewalks and driveways. This often misleads folks into believing that it is caused by drought. Another definitive clue that you may have a chinch bug problem is that the damage does not occur in circular patterns like many of the fungal turf diseases. The brown spots will be more random, and the grass will have a jagged edges that will turn yellow before fully dying and going brown. So what exactly is a chinch bug? It is a slender, black insect that is about 1/8 of an inch long when fully grown. It has white wings that are marked with a triangular black patch in the middle. The immature insects hatch from eggs and are red, and a band of white across the back juts out behind the pads where the adult wings will later develop. Chinch bugs do their damage with a piercing, sucking mouth part by inserting a slender beak into the grass at the base of the plant. It injects toxin and extracts the plant juices. This toxin can be quite damaging and the grass cannot recover. If you do not stop chinch bug activity quickly, they can spread into new turf, causing large areas of damage. Chinch bugs reproduce quickly, as the female deposits 15 to 20 eggs per day for 20 to 30 days on a blade of grass. The eggs hatch in 7 to 10 days. These insects are rather difficult to detect because they are so tiny and often are not readily visible in the lawn from our viewpoint looking down. If you suspect chinch bugs are to blame for the damage in your lawn, try confirming this suspicion by using lemon-scented soap mixed with water and poured onto the lawn to brown area. To make the solution, add 1 to 2 tablespoons of lemon-scented dish soap to a gallon of water. After pouring the solution over a small area, wait for 5 minutes. If chinch bugs are present, you will see them climbing up the grass blades. On this page is a photo of a chinch bug with the caption reading, "An adult chinch bug has white wings that are marked with a triangular black patch in the middle." Photo by Ron Strahan. Page 11. To really investigate, you may need to get down on your knees to look around in the thatch. You can also take a plug of grass from the damaged area and dip it into the soapy water. Then watch for bugs floating through the surface of the solution. Thatch is the area where the lawn sloughs off old stems and roots and replaces them with new plant parts. The accumulation of plant parts often exceeds the rate at which the material breaks down. This creates a layer of thatch above the soil surface. A small amount of thatch is beneficial because it provides organic matter and can help reduce water loss from the soil. However, heavy thatch of more than 3/4 of an inch can be a place where insects such as chinch bugs will thrive. Late summer is a good time to dethatch your lawn. Dethatching will increase the infiltration of air, water, and nutrients into the soil and down into the grass roots, while also stimulating new growth. By increasing lawn vigor, you remove a favorable environment for chinch bugs and other insects to infect your lawn. Dethatching is done in one of two ways. One is by using a thatch rake or heavy garden rake with thick tines to rake deep down into the grass and remove the thatch. Raking is best for an area that is not heavily thatched. If the thatch is thick and the soil compaction is also an issue, mechanical core aeration is better. Aerators are implements that remove cores or plugs from the sod. Rental equipment is often available, and many local landscape and turf companies offer this service. Once you have positively identified chinch bugs are the culprit, they can be controlled by spraying with insecticides containing one or more of the active ingredients, Scimitar CS, Carbaryl, or Cyfluthrin, imidacloprid, according to the label directions. The pH of water used to create the spray solution is important. If the pH is too alkaline, it can cause the insecticide to break down before it has a chance to work, making it less effective and causing you to apply more. Check the pH of the water with a pH paper or meters that you can readily find at most garden stores and nurseries. The pH should be 5.5 to 6.5. You can buffer the pH down by adding vinegar to the water and rechecking as necessary until you've reached the desired pH. Retreating again in 2 weeks to kill any hatched eggs is best practice. If you see further activity 2 weeks later, a subsequent insecticide application may be necessary. Dr. Heather Kirkballard. This page also has a photo of a section of lawn with brown patches with the caption that reads, "Chinch bug damage on a lawn appears as large patches of dead grass." Photo by Dan Gill. Page 12, mini prairie plantings. Prairies are ecosystems considered part of the temperate grasslands, savannas, and shrublands biome by ecologists based on similar temperate climates, moderate rainfall, and a composition of grasses, herbs, and shrubs rather than trees as the dominant vegetation type. Temperate grassland regions include the pampas of Argentina, Brazil, and Uruguay, and the steppe of Ukraine, Russia, and Kazakhstan. Lands typically referred to as prairie tend to be in North America. The term encompasses the area referred to as the interior lowlands of Canada, the United States, and Mexico, which includes all of the Great Plains as well as the wetter, hillier land to the east. A mini prairie or prairie garden is a simulated prairie planting done on a very small scale, suitable for most suburban yards, consisting of mainly native species of grasses and forbs. Why plant a prairie? There are a myriad of reasons to bring a taste of the wild into our personal space. Besides the aesthetically pleasing aspect of having beautiful flowers, there is a bit of duty and purpose to it. Many prairies are resilient. Once established, they are drought tolerant, require no additional fertilizer or irrigation, and are generally easy to maintain. Their plants also have extensive root systems that sequester carbon, create soil, make land more water permeable and less susceptible to flood, and can remove contaminants and excess nutrients from the water runoff before it reaches our waterways. They also provide native habitat for birds, butterflies, insects, reptiles, and other small wildlife. Philosophically speaking, there seems to be a calming effect and sense of belonging to surround ourselves with a semblance of true nature as it was intended to be. The well-known naturalist, the Nature Dude, Bill Fontenot, says there is a sense of time and place associated with native plantings. I think it helps to keep us grounded, to experience seasons in our plantings, as well as a sense of place based on the plants that grow around us. With modern conventional landscaping of cookie-cutter evergreen mounds, shrubs, it can be difficult to distinguish what part of the country it is we're in, much less the season. Prairies and native plantings have a seasonal progression that reminds us of when and where we are in the world. Getting started. First and foremost, find a place. Most prairie plants are sun-loving and require at least half a day or more of sun. You may also need to take your soil type into consideration. This page has a photo of tick seed coreopsis with the appropriate caption. Photo by Mike Glassbell. Page 13. Many prairie plants generally like well-drained soil, perhaps slightly on the drier side, but take comfort As South Louisiana is notoriously lacking in drier soils, that these plants are widely adaptable, and there are always species and seed mixes for different soil types. Next, you'll have to make a plan and decide on your method of establishment. Whichever method you choose, you will likely have to contend with the turf grass lawn and other undesirable weeds that you will have to eliminate. This may be done by utilizing multiple applications of a general herbicide, laying down cardboard or other material to block the light reaching the plants, or by physically removing the plants. For my first planting, I applied a few applications of herbicide about a month apart toward the end of summer and into the fall, and broadcast a prairie-type seed mix in late winter, early spring. Seed-to-soil contact is very important for establishment, so I raked out most of the dead turf grass prior to broadcasting seed. After seeding, I then compacted the area by walking on it to make sure that the seed was in good contact with the soil. Keep the soil moist with irrigation until the seedlings get established. Over time, the plants establish themselves, and through reseeding, natural spread, and competition, they will find their micro niches inside the prairie where they will perform best. In my experience, the seed broadcast method provides a greater diversity of plant species. For my second planting, I placed a layer of cardboard topped with a thick layer of mulch obtained for free from a tree trimming service and allowed it to sit for about a year before planting in it. With this particular planting, I used plugs that I grew from seed in as starter packs. I obtained several species of locally sourced prairie plant seeds and started the seeds either in late summer or early spring. Once established in the planting cells, I plugged them into the planting area a little at a time as they were mature enough to do so. This method has proved to be slightly slower, and I will be adding diversity a little at a time, probably over several years. This page has two photos. The first photo and caption are a purple coneflower, Echinacea purpurea, with a Gulf fritillary butterfly. The second photo is captioned, planting of black-eyed Susan and lemon bee balm, and they have maintained some lawn area. Both photos by Mike Glasgow. However, you have far greater control of the placement of a particular species and can create drifts of color and texture which may be a little more natural in appearance. So far, I am pleased with both methods I've used to establish my mini prairie plantings. They each have had their pros and cons, so I will not recommend one over the other. Choose whatever method works for your situation. Maintenance of mini prairies. As far as establishment goes, control of weeds will be the initial concern for your prairie. The plug and mulching method had a far less weed control issue than the broadcast seeding on open ground did. The mulch between the plugs acted as a ground cover to suppress weeds to a large extent. Both of my mini prairies are small enough that I was able to control weeds by hand for the most part. If you are unable to control weeds by hand, mowing at a high setting above the establishing prairie plants can keep the weeds at bay until the prairie plantings take hold. It is important to have plants spaced fairly close together to create a ground cover to discourage weed growth. In late winter, it will be time to mow or burn your mini prairie to get it ready for new growth. In this regard, I will again be treating both my prairie plantings differently. My oldest planting is in the backyard and in a location where it is safe to have a controlled burn. With a hose on hand, I start a small controlled burn when conditions are favorable, taking wind speed and direction into account. I only have smaller grass species, so fuel is somewhat limited, which is favorable for me as it keeps the flames low and controlled. Extreme caution needs to be used with this method and only as local laws will allow. My newer planting will be mowed and cut back. It is in my front yard and has young trees among the prairie plants that I would not want to damage by fire. There is also still wood mulch that is not completely decomposed that would likely also catch fire. Besides some occasional hand control of the more aggressive species that you may not want to take over the prairie, this is about all the maintenance that will be required. A few miscellaneous things to consider with many prairies. Local ordinances, HOAs, and neighborhood complaints may be a few obstacles you will have to face. I don't have any of these issues, but did some research just in case. This page has two photos. The first is got the caption, "A wild bergamot, Monarda fistulosa, attracts a hummingbird." The second photo with the caption, "Lemon bee balm, Monarda citrodora, with an eastern carpenter bee." Both photos by Mike Laspell. Page 15. Most agree that you have to make your mini prairie appear intentional. This may mean a well-defined border, surrounded by lawn, and contained to a bed, if you will. Also, signage such as wildflower meadow, pollinator garden, native plant habitat, etc., can further indicate that the planting is intentional and not an issue of neglect. You can also speak to neighbors to explain what you're doing beforehand and make them feel a part of the process. Who knows? Maybe they'll even join you, or at least become an ally. The mini prairie will not always appear tidy and neat. Some of these plants will get rangy, and most will die back in the winter. I personally don't mind this, as the winter plant structure and seed heads are also appealing to me, especially the grasses. I intentionally did not get into individual plant species, as this is a personal preference. Most will go with some type of seed mix, which should be sourced as locally as possible, as they are most likely best adapted to your growing conditions. Ratios of grasses to wildflowers should also be considered. Natural prairies usually have a high ratio of grass species compared to forbs. You may want to flip this ratio for a mini prairie, as the grasses can dominate a small space. Patience is needed. Mini prairie plants will not flower the first year, as they are perennials that use the first year for establishment. Most seed mixes compensate for this with the percentage of annuals that will flower the first year. Your prairie will change in appearance not only with the seasons, but from year to year as well. As plants get established, some will naturally be more aggressive, spreading via root rhizomes and/or prolific reseeding. Some will not do well in the conditions they are in and wither away and disappear in a few years. As mentioned previously, there may be a need for some control of the more aggressive species to prevent your prairie from becoming a monoculture. When dealing with ecosystems in miniature versions, you will not always be able to just let nature take its course. Some intervention may occasionally be required. On the positive note, this type of maintenance is very limited and fairly easy to stay on top of. It is also wonderful to find that surprise plant that you never saw before all of a sudden erupt and put on a display without warning. In conclusion, I've tried to give an honest account of the few challenges of establishing a mini prairie, but I hope the overall takeaway is that this will be something you can and want to accomplish. I love all of my native trees, shrubs, and plants, but I have to say the mini prairie is the most rewarding of them all. The diversity of life in both flora and fauna and their interaction is captivating beyond words. Give it a shot, and best of luck, Mike Glaspell. Mike Glaspell is a member of the Native Plant Initiative of Greater New Orleans and the Louisiana Plant Native Plant Society. He and his wife Jessica are hobbyist landscapers focusing on native plants at their home in Lockport, Louisiana. They also enjoy photographing the native flora and fauna of the area. There is one last photo on this page, and that is of Black-Eyed Susan, Rudbeckia hirta, and purple coneflowers, Echinacea purpurea. Page 16. In the Kitchen with Austin. Aqua fresca. What could be more refreshing during the dog days of summer than aqua fresca? Literally translated, acqua fresca means fresh water, but it's much more than that. It's a versatile drink that can be made with any seasonal fruit. Ingredients: 4 cups of drinking water, 2 cups of fresh fruit, 1/4 cup of sugar, 2 teaspoons fresh squeezed lime juice, and mint, which is optional. Directions: in a blender, combine water, sugar, and fruit. Puree until smooth. Pour mixture through a strainer, if desired, into a pitcher or serving container. Stir in the lime juice, taste, then adjust sugar if necessary. Garnish with slices of fresh fruit or mint. Bonjour. There's a photo of Mr. Austin and a photo of a pitcher of acqua fresca and a serving glass. Coming events: Go Grow Natives Fall 2019 Promotional Tour, Saturday, September 7th, Jefferson Feed from 9 a.m. until 11:30 a.m., Double M Feed from 12:30 p.m. till 3 p.m., Saturday, September 14th, Crosby Arboretum, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Saturday, September 21st, Harold's Plants, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Rose Garden Center, 12:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. And Saturday, September 28th, Clegg's Nursery, Segan Lane, 9:30 a.m. to noon. Clegg's Nursery, Denham Springs, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Plant promoting and book signing, featuring Bug Ladies, Butterfly Summer. Page 17, coming events. Saturday, September 7th, 10:30 to 12:30 p.m. Make a Hypertufa outdoor flower pot at the New Orleans Botanical Garden, number 5 Victory Avenue, New Orleans. $25 pre-registration required. You may find more information about the event on their Facebook page by searching for New Orleans Botanical Garden. Monday, September 9th, 4:30 to 6 p.m., Backyard Farming for Fall at Grow On Urban Farm, 2358 Urquhart in New Orleans. Cost is $20. Search for their event on Facebook by searching for Grow On Urban Farm. Saturday, September 21st, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., Louisiana Cooking Class, Hands in the Soil Outdoor Cooking and Garden Day at NOCA, 2800 Charter Street, New Orleans. $100 pre-registration required. Again, you can find their event by searching for NOCA on Facebook. Saturday, September 21st, 10:30 a.m. to noon, collecting seed from Louisiana native plants at the New Orleans Botanic Gardens, number 5 Victory Avenue, New Orleans. $12 pre-registration required. Find the event again on Facebook by searching for New Orleans Botanical Gardens. Monday, September 23rd, 4:30 to 6 p.m., Intro to Permaculture at Grow On Urban Farms, 2358 Urquhart, New Orleans. $20. Find them on Facebook. Saturday, September 28th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., Herb Society Plant Sale at 8301 Olive Street, New Orleans. It is free. For further information, contact Linda Franzo at lindafranzo57@gmail.com or 985-781-4372. Saturday, September 28th, 9 a.m. to noon, the Greater New Orleans Irish Society General Meeting at the Jefferson Parish Public Library, 4747 West Napoleon Avenue in Metairie. Cost is free. Again, they can be found on Facebook. Monday, September 30th, 4:30 to 6 p.m., Grow Mushrooms on Coffee Grounds at Grow On Urban Farm, 2358 Urquhart, New Orleans. Cost is $20. Find them on Facebook. The Fall Garden Festival. Garden design, urban farming, music at the New Orleans Botanical Garden, October 5th and 6th, 2019. Page 18. LSU Ag Center Annie's Project, Risk Management Workshops, Empowering Women in Agriculture, September 19th and 20th, 2019, Dean Lee Research Station, Rapides Parish, 300 Grady Britt Drive, Alexandria, Louisiana, 71302. Event sponsored by NRCS. Farm and ranch women are generating a cultural tide in American agriculture that is moving management, assets, and opportunities in a new wave of farmers across the country. At Annie's Project courses, farm women become empowered to be better business partners or sole operators through networks and by managing and organizing critical information. LSU Ag Center will host Annie's Project Level 1 workshop on September 19th and 20th, 2019, at the Dean Lee Research Station Conference Room. Annie's Project is an educational program dedicated to strengthening women's roles in modern farm and ranch enterprises. It creates a learning environment where participants build and enhance problem-solving and decision-making skills. Annie's Project Level 1 emphasizes the five areas of agricultural risk, namely production, marketing, financial, legal, and human resource risk. Financial risk. Women and money, basic financial documentation, interpreting financial statements, enterprise analysis, USDA programs, and record-keeping systems. Human resource risk. Communication and management styles, insurance need, and succession planning. Legal risk. Estate planning, farmland leasing, and employee management. Market risk, access to market information, and grain or livestock marketing. Production risk, natural resources conservation service, web soil survey, and crop insurance. Each day the workshop meets from 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Lunch and refreshments will be provided. Main sponsors, NRCS, and Farm Credit. Register online by September 13th, 2019. Registration for this event is free, but there is limited availability. For more information, please contact Maria Bampasidu, State Coordinator, at 225-578-2367 or email mbampasidou at agcenter.lsu.edu. Page 19, Farmers Markets in the Greater New Orleans Area. In Jefferson Parish, visit Fat City Farmers Market at 3215 Edenborn Metairie every second and fourth Sunday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Gretna Farmers Market, 739 3rd Street in Gretna, every Saturday except the Saturday of Gretna Fest, 8:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Kenner Rivertown Farmers Market, 2115 Reverend Richard Wilson Drive in Kenner, every Saturday, October through July, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Nolan's Outdoor Market, 1048 Scottsdale Drive in Harvey, every Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Old Metairie Farmers Market, Bayou Metairie Park between Metairie Lawn Drive and LaBarre, third Tuesday of the month, 3:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. West Wego Shrimp Lot, 100 West Bank Expressway, West Wego, daily Monday through Saturday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., Sunday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Crescent City Farmers Market, Bucktown, 325 Metairie Hammond Highway at Bucktown Harbor, Fridays 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Crescent City Farmers Market, Rivertown, New Orleans, Williams Boulevard at the River, Saturdays 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Crescent City Farmers Market, Ochsner West Campus, 2614 Jefferson Highway, Ochsner Rehab Facility, Wednesdays 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. In Orleans Parish, Laughing Buddha Farm Hubs, see their website. In Broadmoor, Bywater, Lakeview, Irish Channel, Mid-City, Algiers Point, Uptown, Covington locations. Visit Laughing Buddha/events for information. Crescent City Farmers Market Uptown, 200 Broadway Street at the River, Tuesdays, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Crescent City Farmers Market, Bywater, Charters and Piety at Rusty Rainbow Bridge, Wednesdays, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Crescent City Farmers Market, Mid-City, 3700 Orleans Avenue, Thursdays, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Crescent City Farmers Market, Downtown, 750 Carondelet Street at Julia, Saturdays, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. Sankofa Market, 5029 St. Claude Street, Monday through Thursday, 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Refresh Farmers Market, 300 North Broad Street, Mondays, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Vietnamese Farmers Market, 14401 L.C. Forche Boulevard, Saturdays, 5:30 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. Marketplace at Armstrong Park, 901 North Rampart, Thursdays, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Mid-City Arts and Farmers Market, Comiskey Park. Market dates vary. Check midcity.org for information. Treme Farmers Market, 814 North Claude. Again, market dates vary. Visit gloriastremegarden.com/treme-farmers-market for more information. In St. Bernard, visit the St. Bernard Seafood and Farmers Market, 409 Acock Street, Araby. Second Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Page 20. September checklist garden tips. Mulches may have decayed and thinned out over the summer. Replenish mulch layers with fresh material to maintain about a 2 to 3 inch layer. Ideally, use what you can get for free, such as leaves, dry grass clippings, or pine straw. If you prefer the appearance of purchased mulch, put down an inch or two of leaves, dry grass clippings, or pine straw, and then top it off with about an inch of your favorite purchased mulch. This will save money and still give the look you like. Only light pruning will be appropriate on shrubs from now to the spring. Late heavy pruning will stimulate growth in the fall and increase the chance of cold damage to your shrubs. Remember, spring flowering shrubs and gardenias, hydrangeas, sasanquas, and camellias have already set their flower buds. Any pruning now will remove the flower buds and reduce the display. From now until next spring, do not apply fertilizers containing nitrogen to most landscape plants. Fertilizing trees, shrubs, lawns, and ground covers with nitrogen in the fall can reduce the hardiness of some plants and promote winter injury. Plant petunias into the garden now for blooms this fall and next spring. Petunias, snapdragons, nicotiana, calendula, and dianthus are among the more heat-tolerant, cool-season bedding plants and can be planted earlier than more heat-sensitive plants such as pansies. Control caterpillar problems on ornamentals with a pesticide containing BT, spinosad, or carbaryl. BT is a bacterium that only attacks caterpillars and is harmless to other organisms. It is essentially non-toxic and is appropriate for use by organic gardeners. Spinosad is also organic. Make applications before damage is too extensive and make sure the damage is fresh and the caterpillars are still active before you treat. Keep these materials well away from the butterfly garden areas. They are toxic to butterfly caterpillars. Evaluate caladium plantings. When the plants begin to look tired and less attractive, and about two-thirds of the leaves have fallen over, it is time to dig the tubers. Caladiums may return next year if left in the ground, but it is more reliable to dig them and store them indoors over the winter. Dig the tubers carefully, leaving the foliage attached. Spread out in a well-ventilated area to dry. When the foliage is dry and brown, remove it from the tubers and store them in a paper or net bags indoors. Many summer weeds are setting seeds now. Do not let this happen. Pull these weeds and dispose of them to reduce the weed problems for next year. Remove the canes from blackberry bushes that produced fruit this summer. They will not produce again. Vegetative canes may be tipped back to control their growth. It is time to divide and transplant Louisiana irises, Easter lilies, and calla lilies. Louisiana irises generally do best when divided every 3 years. Mail order spring bulbs in time for them to arrive in October or November. Bulbs are also readily available in local nurseries now. You can go ahead and purchase them, but there is no hurry to plant them. Water your vegetable and flower gardens deeply and thoroughly once or twice a week during dry weather. When a good rain comes, 1/2 to 1 inch, adjust your watering schedule accordingly. A daily watering is not recommended for established plants. It increases disease and encourages a shallow root system. Newly seeded beds, however, should be watered daily until the seeds come up. New transplants also need to be watered more frequently, and plants in containers may need to be watered every day. The hurricane season is kicking into high gear now, and if you haven't already done so, it is time to look over your landscape. In particular, shade trees in the landscape should be carefully evaluated to make sure they are in good shape. Dead branches must be pruned off and dead trees removed entirely. Page 21. Lawn care do's and don'ts. Do's. Finish laying sod by the middle of the month to give it time to establish before winter. Number 2. Apply a pre-emergent herbicide to prevent winter weed seeds from germinating in the lawn. 3. As the weather gets cooler, you may apply selective herbicides to eliminate broadleaf weeds in the lawn. 4. Aerate the soil if necessary to alleviate compaction. 5. Dethatch the lawn if necessary. This is the last month before winter to dethatch. 6. Continue to scout for fungal damage and control with fungicides if necessary. The most prevalent is called large patch of warm season turfgrass. Search LSU Ag Center large patch to find more information. 7. Irrigate as necessary to moisten the soil to a depth of 4 to 6 inches. The best time to water is in the morning. 8. Keep an eye open for insect pests. Hot, dry weather is ideal for chinch bug damage to show up in area lawns, particularly St. Augustine. 9. Spread fill soil and compost over the lawn to add organic material and smooth out the lawn. Do not add more than 2 inches over actively growing grass. 10. Set your mower to the correct height for the turf grass type. 11. Take a soil test. Test kits are available in our offices in the Botanical Gardens, the Yeni Building, and New Orleans City Hall, as well as local garden centers. You may find a video of Dr. Joe on Facebook if you go to our GNO Gardening Facebook page and under the videos tabs. Don'ts. Do not apply fertilizer to the lawn again until April of next year. Number 2, do not apply phosphorus winterizer to the lawn without taking a soil sample first. We have ample amounts of phosphorus in our soil already. 3, do not attempt to install a new lawn with sprigs or seeds until spring. Number 4, do not cut more than 1/3 of the height of lawn grass at a single time. Number 5, do not try to grow grass in deep shade. Your local extension office is here to help. Email us at gnogardening@agcenter.lsu.edu. You may also find us on Facebook at GNO Gardening. For more information, visit lsuagcenter.com. Joe Willis, Orleans Parish Horticulture Agent, 504-483-9471, Anna Timmerman, Jefferson Parish Horticulture Agent, 504-736-6519. And Chris Dunaway, GNO Area Extension Associate, 504-736-6519. To subscribe to this newsletter, please send us a request to gnogardening@agcenter.lsu.edu. The LSU Ag Center is a statewide campus of the LSU system and provides equal opportunities in programs and employment. Thank you. Again, this has been Chris Dunaway as your reader. Please find us on GNO Gardening on Facebook.